Hello and welcome to the D20 Future Show. I am, as always, your host and your GM, Richard. Today we have our third and final extended Dragon Meet interview. This time we speak to role-playing industry legend, prolific author, and thoroughly nice bloke, Gareth Hanrahan. Gareth and I chat about Dragon Meet, writing for established IPs, and quite a lot about the Babylon 5 role-playing game from the early 2000s. If you're not a Babylon 5 fan, that stretch of it may be a bit of a tough listen. Fair to say Gareth is even more of a Babylon 5 nerd than I am, I think. Our live stream show, the D20 Future Show Live, is on a brief work travel related hiatus, but should be back on the 9th of March when, for the first time on stream, the D20 Future Show cast will be playing Grant Howitt and Chris Taylor's magnum opus, Jason Statham's Big Vacation. We will be live at 18:30 GMT on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/D20 Future Show. Now, let's speak to Gareth. Hello and welcome to the D20 Future Show. I am, as always, your host, Richard, and I have with me Gareth Hanrahan, who is a writer, game designer, and is responsible, at least according to Board Game Geek, perhaps you can confirm, Gareth, millions of words of games writing.
That sounds entirely accurate.
Including words for Conan, Traveller, White Wolf, and something very close to my heart that hopefully we'll be able to talk about later, Babylon 5. Welcome, Gareth.
Yeah, I'm not sure why White Wolf is up there. I think it's like about 2,000 words for them, which is a minuscule drop in the ocean. But
well, they all add up.
Indeed.
So, listener, we were just saying, I was introduced to Gareth very briefly at Dragon Meet with the words, "This is Gareth. He gives good interview. I'll put the two of you in touch," by a mutual friend of ours. And that, so far, is everything that I haven't learned from Gareth by looking him up on the internet. So I'm going to ask some good questions, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, with a ringing endorsement like that, he gives good interview.
Pretty much all the pressure's on you at this point, Gareth. I've lowered the listeners' expectations. So, with my first insightful, powerful question, how is your Dragon Meet?
I mean, Dragon Meet is always so short, you really notice it. It's like it's a one-day con.
Yes.
And if you're... I was running the Pelgrane train stand, so you go in, you set up, you sell books, there is a brief flurry where someone runs and gets a sandwich for lunch, and then you look at your watch and it's like, you know, 3:30 and you're starting this, tidying up. It's like all these are the logistical fuss of Gen Con all crammed into like one day instead of six. I mean, I'm very, very fond of Dragon Meet. I've been going to it since its reboot back in the usually tells me something, wasn't it? So I'm very, very fond of it, but it is always it's like a mayfly of a con where you get there and you have lots of very intense brief conversations and then it's all done. We're on the next year. So it was good, but yeah.
But so brief. Yes. It's a funny old time. As a podcaster, we find ourselves in the podcast zone. And it sort of means that if you do anything, you end up, that's the thing you do at Dragon Meet this year.
Yeah, look, I'm aware there is a thing called the podcast zone.
Yep.
And I've walked past it many times.
Yep.
But because the con is so short, I've had no point of any chance to go and go, oh, this is the podcast zone. They zone their podcasts here.
We do zone our podcasts there, absolutely. If you stand still long enough, someone will hand you a flyer and tell you about their podcast. That's pretty much it. We do steady business as people come through. This year it seemed to be draftier. It seemed to be less drafty than last year, where it seemed to be very drafty there.
Well, I mean, the attendance was up this year. So you said more padding, basically, of like, you know, punters between you and the door.
Just human insulation, yeah, maybe.
Exactly.
Fantastic. So you were there, kind of running and manning the Pelgrane stall.
Exactly. We're down our usual position on the ground floor.
And what was the big thing for Pelgrane this year?
Actually, we didn't actually have a big thing this year. We were hoping to have, back in the usual planning stages, to have the long-awaited print version of the Brennus Connection, which is a campaign I did with Ken Heiss, which is for the Folded Green, which is basically your... Folded Green is 1960s Delta Green Agents versus Cthulhu Mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And the campaign is based around the heroin trade, so basically you're going from like the opium fields of the Far East and then to Turkey, through Marseille, onto the United States, basically following the heroin trade and using the battle against the heroin trade as your cover for fighting the mythos, which we've been promising for the last 4 years. It's all written, it's been in layout. It is nearly out of layout, but we had hoped it would be in print for Dragon Meet, but it wasn't. So no brand new stuff at the stall, but we had stuff that hadn't been at Gen Con, which... like, it's Fearful Symmetries at Gen Con. Anyway, nothing majorly new, but a nice trade anyway. Our regular coterie of customers come around and say hi.
Excellent. So it's a positive experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dragon's always a lovely experience. It's a very short one.
Yes, yeah. It's always intense. You're always trying to... I afford 5 minutes to do this or that?
Yeah.
I imagine even worse if you're expected to be on the stall most of the time.
Yeah, you're sort of like... Not quite scheduling your bathroom breaks, but sort of like you're going... Okay, I'm now going to make a bolt around the trade hall and see everyone I can possibly see in those 2 minutes.
Absolutely. Time just enough to say hello. So did you, in fact, manage to get any sort of shopping of any note done, or was it really just a question of bolting around and saying hello to the usual faces?
At the con, I don't think I actually bought anything. Most of my buying was when you go up to trade stands going, hello, I've written books for you. Can I have the books I wrote? And getting, like, you know, author's copies. Then on the Sunday, we've been traditionally going around bookstores. So we was there as Ken was raiding various bookstores, and I made it very briefly to the fantasy exhibition in the British Library.
Okay.
Which I was only okay. There was some lovely stuff there, but also it felt like wandering around my bedroom going, oh, I have that book, and I have that book, and I have, you know, oh, look, it's a copy of the D&D Red Box. I've got that. It's in a museum. I feel very old now. And then I also found one of my books in the gift shop, because it's a... fantasy mm-hmm. exhibition. They have lots of fantasy books, and they have quite a few role playing books as well. And they had some of the One Ring stuff I've written. So they're going, "Ooh, I'm in the British Library." That's like, you know, achievement unlocked.
Absolutely, there are few more ringing endorsements than being in the British Library, particularly being, indeed, I guess, for sale in the British Library. That's pretty good. It's not just shoved in a book.
Exactly. Yeah. Every published author is in the British Library, but you're normally in some, like, you know, giant warehouse in the middle of nowhere.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they get a copy of everything. And I wanted to look up how they, like, store them all, and how hard it would be to break in for an like agent's adventure where they were trying to raid some, like, you know, occult tome. It's a very big elevator, apparently, which is, like, just for books.
Okay, right. Cool. So your Dragon Meat was sort of was selling lots of things and wishing you had the new campaign published.
Exactly, yes. But in general, it seemed to go very well. Everyone I talked to said it, like, was a busier con than previous years, and... everyone's now speculating about where it's going next, because they're apparently more has outgrown the hotel at Hammersmith, so there's various speculation about other places in London. I don't know. I know solely of names.
Yeah, I think I seem to remember there was speculation last year about it either going 2 days or finding a new location, and neither of those happened yet.
Yeah, I think going 2 days will run into hotel issues, because apparently London hotels are... daunting in terms of prices.
Yes, yeah. I certainly from when I first started to go to Dragon Meat, the prices have gone up substantially. I checked myself into a nearby hotel, not of a chain. I think probably a mistake I've made for the last time. Negotiations continue between me and hotels.com as to whether or not that can be described as a 3-star hotel. I'm of the opinion that it cannot be described as a hotel, let alone as a 3-star hotel.
Oh dear.
A story I won't moan about here. I think I may well just have to kind of screw my wallet up to the sticking point and cash out for staying in the hotel itself rather than one nearby that turns out to be not as nice as I'd hoped.
Yeah.
But there's something great about being around there if you can afford the night before and the night of, and then you're not rushing away.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I always stay at Simon Rogers' place, who's the publisher of Pelgrane, so we all basically crowd his house. We have a game on the Friday night, and it's like sort of wonderful reunion, because Pelgrane, we do most of work for our distribution, so we've got, like, you know, writers in Toronto, in Chicago, in Ireland, in London, so we only get together at, like, Dragon Meet and Gen Con, really.
Okay, yeah, no, that's you're not the first person who works for a publisher I've heard say, oh, we all get together beforehand and...
eat and drink and marry.
Absolutely. So what did you play on the Friday night?
I got Lumbered with the game this year, and I put together two scenarios, together, like, you know, a serious, sober playtest of the new Trail of Cthulhu 2nd Edition rules. And I put together a very, very silly murder mystery set in the Shire called Shire's Out.
Okay.
And they went for the very, very silly murder mystery.
Obviously. Yep. Okay.
Indeed. So they loudly mocked Tolkien in various forms. And it was a somewhat lubricated game.
Right. Yes.
Which is very, very well. It's always nice when you can work in, like, you know, the outer character serving of food and drinks into the game. So, like, you know, you're all in and they serve you toffee pudding and, like, you're the top of your wine glasses. Awesome dice.
That's an immersive experience, I think. That's
precisely that is a very pretentious way of saying We got somewhat drunk.
Fantastic.
But no, again, a good time was had by all, and again, too brief.
Yes, yeah. This is the trouble, is it goes by in a flash. Something that I imagine you didn't get a chance to do, and I think next year I need to make time to do, which is actually play some games at Dragon Meet.
Yeah. The last time I played a game of Dragon Meet was like in the early 2000s. I've heard it's a good thing to do at cons, but it so rarely happens.
Yeah, the UK Games Expo, I did get to play a couple of things. But again, you've sort of I've got this schedule and you have to sort of book it in. You think, well, between this time and this time, that's 4 or 5 hours. I'm just wiping off my con time. So, yeah, it's. I think maybe it may be time I just support the podcast then remotely rather than being there and sitting there, because it takes up such a lot of the very brief window you have to actually be there. So,
well, please, staff or something. Like, you have someone there on your podcast. Or be a mobile podcast or a roaming podcast.
Yes, I mean, if you stand still long enough, I'll tell you about my podcast. That's just a thing that happens. I think it's just more sanctioned in the podcast than this stuff. Whereas it starts to become, you know, obnoxious elsewhere, but it's never stopped me.
Designated free speech zone.
Yes, well, yeah. Either way, I sort of take myself off and grab people for brief interviews, which are always fun. I went through a phase of only doing interviews at the con, and then they're all sort of about 5 minutes, and they're essentially, how's your Dragon Meet? Oh, it's going really well. What thing have you got to plug? And we're done.
Yeah.
And those are great, particularly when you get to meet new people and hear about new products and stuff. But and then slightly more kind of long form sit down that are longer or shorter form depending on who you're interviewing. I'm not sure if I have time to interview Callum from the Roll East podcast, who always runs a well over an hour as we have a lovely time talking about our time at Dragon Meet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess that sort of covers your Dragon Meet. You turned up, you had a nice time, you caught up with some friends, you sold some books.
Yeah, it's like slightly frantic fashion, but zoom in and out. Other people from the Pelgrane crew shall remain nameless, get to linger on in London for a few days and go to more museums and dinners, but because I've got two kids, or three kids, whoops. I had to zoom back for childminding.
Absolutely, yes. Parental responsibility.
Indeed.
So, was it literally fly in, stay one night or two nights and fly out again? Or?
I flew on Thursday because of all the setup. We were able to get into the hall early. You were downstairs and do setup on the Friday.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to all the poor trade stands upstairs who couldn't do setup until 8 o'clock on the Friday night.
Gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Because for mostly, at Gen Con, for example, we fly in 2 days early and the whole of the Wednesday before the convention is just setting up the trade stand and unpacking books and so forth. One of the many unglamorous sides of the role-playing industry is hauling books around and counting them and realizing you hauled the same box of books around to the same con 20 different times and count them every time and sold none of that particular obscure ancient supplement.
Yes, yeah, I can't imagine that's an edifying experience going, and particularly as books are so heavy.
They really, really are.
We'll look to selling something lighter, like gas or something. That feels like could make our lives easier.
Sure, I'm just thinking of GasCon now. I presume it's all balloons. Very, very sort of scenic.
It could work. GasCon, all balloons, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there may be some health and safety and or legal issues around a convention exclusively relating to selling gases, but...
Well, you just make him not... Yeah, just no smoking.
Yeah, that would definitely be a big requirement. Anyway, before this flight of fancy gets too elaborate, Babylon 5. So I am a big fan of Babylon 5 since, I may have mentioned it, since it was broadcast on Channel 4 in the UK, which was, it started at a sort of reliable time and then got moved about in a way that made it very difficult, unless your parents had a video recorder, which we did. So we watched, I think it may have been all that was broadcast in the UK in the 90s. And then not so long ago, I acquired, and by acquired, I mean my friend Alex bought me for my birthday, all of it on DVD. So we have it all. And my wife and I watch it every few years, watch the whole thing, and then try and decide whether we're going to watch the spin-offs or not, because they're not as good, but they are more Babylon 5.
They're really not. Yes, but they're their own issues. Well, the Crusade has side points.
The last couple of episodes are when it gets really good, which is what's so sad about Crusade.
Indeed. My Babylon 5 initial experience, a friend of mine back in college had all of it recorded on VHS. And how it would work was that basically he would loan parts of the collection to various people. And one night his parents were visiting him, and there's a knock at the door. And he goes, excuse me, gets up, goes to the door. And his parents overhear the following conversation. Donal, can I get some more? Like, just like, you know, just a few, just to get me to the weekend. And Donal walks into the back of the living room, steps past his parent, takes some, like, you know, tapes off the shelf, goes back to the door. Just, oh, thank you. I'll get the ones I owe you as soon as I can. And this like dark figure scurries off down the road with the next. Indeed. So yeah, I watched a new and loved Babylon 5 back in the day. And when I was with Mongoose Publishing, they had Babylon 5 role playing license. Mm-hmm. It was a D20 game because it was back in the days when everything that moved was converted to D20.
Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, I wrote the second edition of that for them. And did what, three or four of the supplements? I definitely did the Psycor. I did Campaign, did Earth Force. Actually, Babylon 5 was not quite cursed, but it had, there were a couple of supplements had issues. There was a plan to do a Earthman Barry War supplement, but they didn't want to replicate anything that was in the Earth Force source book, the Mbari source book, or the main rule book.
Huh.
And they sort of covered everything that was done in the war. So at one point, I was on a boat in Australia, because I was on holiday, learning to scuba dive. And then I would get out of the water, take up my laptop, and find myself writing Mbari war poetry.
It's a living, I guess.
It was. Until they cancelled that book, going, hang on, this is ridiculous. We're just like, you know.
Yeah.
Literally trying to make a content.
A tough sell.
But yeah, the actual core of it was great fun. I also got to do the IPX source book when we were doing Crusade stuff. That was also really good fun, because then archaeology is always a great laugh.
Yeah, and a great source of plot hooks, I imagine, stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's basically Space Cthulhu all over the place.
Yes, so the campaign itself, what did that kind of follow along the main storyline of the show, or how did that work?
We was done as a full game line. So basically your core rule book was five or six different classes. It was like pilot, there was telepath, there was diplomat, picture class, picture race. Then we had like a bunch of different campaign ideas for it. You could either play diplomats, you could play explorers, you could play soldiers. So if you're playing like the Earth Force source book, we're all playing human pilots or soldiers. And we had like adventures for each year, various scenario scenes. I did one campaign called The Ragged Edge, which was basically you're playing this Centauri conspiracy. Basically, it was like a sort of riff on Asimov and Psychohistory, where basically the Centauri spymaster had worked out the Centauri Empire was on the verge of collapsing.
Okay.
And you were basically this band of spies who were sent off on missions. So it's engineer effectively a soft landing for the Centauri Empire. So basically, it was going off doing behind the scenes stuff to ensure that Centauri allied with Earth, that the Narn were kept in check, that various Centauri people didn't overreach and cause wars, and that dragged you into the shadow conflict and so forth, all behind the scenes. And that was in the background of the second through the fourth series. I did another adventure, one shot, I was really, really happy with. We were playing Prison Santiago's cabinet, Victoria's inner staff. So basically, it was the West Wing in space. Basically, you were running his re-election campaign, and the various scenarios were negotiate a new treaty with the Mbari, deal with labor issues on Earth, and then the final adventure was the final flight of his ship, where he gets spoilers for a 20-30 year old series at this point. He gets assassinated.
I was going to say, if you haven't seen it by now, what are you doing with your life, viewer? I understand it's not available to stream anywhere, but buy it on DVD. You won't regret it. Mm-hmm. It's great.
It really is.
I suspect only the weird copyright hang-ups between Warner Brothers and J. Michael Straczynski stop it from being more successful kind of now than it was. Although we had The Long Road. We had the animated show.
Yeah, which... that did sort of highlight that aged badly, but Babylon 5, and this was also sort of the issue with the roleplay game, Babylon 5 has one fantastic central story.
Yes.
Like the whole Shadow War, Earth, Space, and until you branch off that, it doesn't have the same staying power. Everything else feels like either you're sort of twiddling at the very edges, or it feels like a sort of add-on and doesn't feel like going to the main story.
Yes, yeah, no, it's a very big kind of, yeah, the big grand central story for which there are interesting stories within it, yeah. But yeah, you can't upset the you kind of, yeah, I guess the same sort of problem as you have with things like Star Wars, in that there's a big central narrative, yeah, that sees the kind of rise of the Jedi, the fall of the Jedi, the rise of the Empire, the collapse of the Empire, and then building the New Republic. And you sort of have to tell either stories so far away from the central story, or you have to tell things at sort of either end so that things are kind of undefined. I think that's sort of where it ends up. And it's a bit hard to imagine the next story with Babylon 5, which I guess is partly why... I mean, there was Crusade, yeah, but then, and maybe, but I don't think that was successful enough to sort of hang a publishable campaign on.
Not really. But I mean, it's the same problem we have with The One Ring, which is a lot of work for, where basically the Tolkien story is like the absolute major spine. You can't do anything after that, so you start looking for little places where there's like either Tolkien doesn't address directly, or you can sort of fit in your own little stories. And you sort of cultivate a clear assumption that you will not be playing the great movers and shakers. You will not be sort of shaping the universe.
Yeah.
You will be like, you know, your story will be fitting in with everything else. Which is oddly harder to do in Babylon 5, because basically once you give players a spaceship, they can like create lots of havoc and hyperspace off course very easily.
Yes. Or meet a shadow vessel and die immediately.
Indeed. Or what's worse is meet a shadow vessel and then go, everyone, there are shadows.
Yes.
And like, you spoil the whole, like, you know, build up to the plot if you're doing a prequel game or a game that sort of tries to fit into the timeline.
Well, there's a danger the Vorlons will come after you and kill you for it, yes.
Oh, this is a brief lot of stories. I also got to do the Vorlon source book.
Oh, wow.
It was great, because it basically, like, there were rules for playing Vorlons and, like, you know, doing stuff over millions of years. Like, there was one of the campaign suggestions was basically, like, you wake up every, like, you know, million years at basically slowly building up civilizations and so forth. For a D20 game, it really did push the D20 mechanics as far as it could.
Yes. Yeah, at the point where you're playing Vorlons, that's very different from, I think, the intention of the OGL license.
Exactly.
Of, you know, basically people with sticks hitting each other and casting spells. That's wow, Vorlons.
I thought, like, Kosh was the wizard.
I feel myself having to take to eBay and finding out how much the Vorlons sourcebook's going to cost me. I suspect there aren't many in circulation.
I suspect not. Especially if that would have been during the Mongoose experiment with print on demand, where they bought their own print equipment.
Ah, all right, even worse. Yeah.
Yeah, there were some binding issues, so a lot of the books from that era are available in a, like, you know, collectible loose leaf format.
All right, okay. That sounds fascinating. I guess that my main question about that is, given that you are fitting in with this very rigid full story, and it because Babylon 5 takes place over whatever it is 6 years and covers events of kind of galactic shape, how does the kind of writing approval work for that? Because again, you're not, I assume you weren't working with J. Michael Straczynski so much as you were writing with Warner Brothers signing things off.
Yeah, I mean, JMS was very, very, very hands-on.
Okay.
Like, we wouldn't be... I've done a lot of licensed games, so with some, it is very much sort of, it goes off to the company and someone anonymous gives it a yay or an A. Mm-hmm. But with Babylon 5, we weren't ever dealing directly with JMS, although he was, like, because he was so active on Usenet, this is really dating me, and various mailing lists, you could, it was close, like, ask him a question and get an answer there and then, if it ever came up. But with all these things, basically, you send off your material to the publisher, you normally flag areas where there are possible, either you sort of delve into, like, one of the contentious bits of canon, or you want clarification on something. But generally, role-playing games are very, very text-heavy and very fiddly, mm-hmm, which is they're a lot harder to approve than, like, you know, a mug. Like, if you, like, you know, license thing, push and go, oh, yes, this mug has a Vorlon on it. It looks like a Vorlon.
Yes.
Tick. if you send them a, like, you know, 70,000 word Vorlon sourcebook giving the history of the Vorlons and everything else, there's a lot more work for them, and there's lots less money in roleplay games than in random mugs, I suspect, which means that by the time a property is licensed roleplay games, it tends to be towards the end of its life, so there tends to be less tension on it, so you can usually get away with more stuff.
Okay.
Or certainly have less... They tend to, not, careless is the wrong word, but they're not going to worry too much about you sort of pushing against the boundaries of the license a little bit. But again, it varies with the license. Like, so like the One Ring, there's a lot more, or Doctor Who, which I was doing for as well, there's a lot more attention. But Doctor Who was an easy one because Doctor Who canon.
Oh, yes, yeah. As long, it's, sure, why not? Yeah. There's so much of it no one can remember, and if it contradicts itself, yeah, sure, that it does.
Whereas, but yeah, but on 5, we had to be a lot more precise in it, but it helped that basically everyone working on it was Babylon 5 nerds, so...
Yeah, I imagine that gives a bit of an edge.
Yeah.
Although, experience I've heard from other people, it just the tricky bit sometimes being explaining what a role-playing game is... And so what are the ramifications of what you've written? Was that ever a thing? Or
I've heard similar stories, but I think if you're very, very lucky, the person handling approvals is also a gamer, which has happened a few times, or and they sort of get it. And no, I mean, normally they look at the core rulebook and be confused by all the numbers and just focus on their things. And if you give a good impression with your initial pitch and the initial core rulebook, and give them the impression that you are like real competent and will treat the property with the respect it deserves, they won't look too closely at what happens after that, as long as you... A lot of it is very, very, very visual as well. Like they're focused on like the image you got from them or the images of their characters, whatever. And as long as it looks right, they tend to not like analyze every single word of the text. But again, it varies license. You can sometimes get like, you know, run into someone who's really, really persnickety and wants very, very... specific changes, which can be tricky with a role-playing game because there are so many dependencies in role-playing game text more than other things. But no, I've done a lot of licensed games, and the number of times a licensor has come back and said this must be changed is quite rare.
Okay, I guess the advantages of being given a kind of toy set to play in, and then giving you starting points rather than go write a game.
Yeah.
It needs to be a game is. Yeah, challenge. And persuading people to sit down at a table is a bit easier if you go, right, there's this existing story, you sort of could get the genre.
Yeah, here, watch these episodes. Don't watch that episode.
Leave that one. Yes, it's...
exactly.
I get, in theory, in the process of running a campaign of The Expanse. In fact, we're 2 sessions in over about 2 years, because getting together physically in the same room has been tricky, and most of them haven't seen any of the show. So when it turns out, well, and spoiler, I guess, for my podcast, one of the players has relatives on Eros at the start of the campaign.
Right.
And then somewhere between session 1 and session 2, the thing on Eros happens. So we're yet to explore the ramifications of that. But rather than it being a sort of cool tie-in and them going, oh, it's more that I think, oh, this is going to be really mean because I have to tell this person what's going to happen to their family, and it isn't my fault, it's what's in the text.
But that's great, that's reliability. That's why when I'm writing adventures, I'm often do horribly mean things. Because like, when I'm running a game for my group, I'm completely wimp as a GM. I'm like, you'll be like, oh, no, I want to get to be happy and nice things. But if someone else, even if someone else is me, has written it and published it as, like, you know, and then your family dies horribly. Yeah. I can blame the book. It's great.
It's not me. It's James S.E. Corey. I guess.
Exactly.
Although I was the one who insisted we establish where his family were from, and they didn't correct him when he said, Eros, sure, why not?
It adds drama.
I think I'd confused where the events took place. So I didn't flag there was a problem with them being on Eros, but... yeah, there are. I'm glad to say they have been catching up with the show. So as events from kind of play out in the background, which I hope won't be too much of a problem because The Expanse sort of... Nobody knows about most of the things until James Holden announces them to the whole of the belt. So I need to make sure I get those announcements in my campaign to kind of hold the timeline together. But you're off on a ship and you're doing things, but it's I'm running the published adventure that kind of came with the Kickstarter, which is pretty good. that's a slightly strange one in that originally The Expanse was a role-playing game campaign.
Yeah, it was a D20 Modern, wasn't it, or something? Or in fact,
I believe, yeah, it was D20 Future, which is a it's just a supplement to D20 Modern.
Yeah. Exactly, it's a whole tie-in.
which is very much for the D20 Future Show. Exactly. And you think it's full circle in some sort of strange way.
Indeed.
Come round, but has always had that built in, that idea that a group of people get together and do a thing.
Yeah.
Which can sometimes feel a bit sort of strangely forced onto some stories.
Yeah.
That mostly revolve around a hero, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, actually, in Babylon 5, the Deku. The core group of Babylon 5 is, like, you know, you've got, like, the station crew, but you also have the ambassadors, and everyone wants to play the ambassadors, because the ambassadors are you've got Jakar and Londo, and, who are classic player characters in their actions and reactions, but it makes less and less sense to have, a party of, three Earth War soldiers and a random drunk Centauri ambassador.
Yes, yeah. Or any mix of the ambassadors. There's a sort of, a strange mix to convince everyone to get together. But
Actually, that's a great excuse to do sort of multi-level role-playing games where, this week you're playing, the station crew, and then you will debate, you'll just, switch to your backup character and play through the council session.
Mm.
We all get to argue about what happened, and then switch back to the guys on the line.
I've never done that. That's interesting possibilities there. Yeah, well, fascinated to hear a bit of the background. Been old enough, but not into role playing games at the time of the D20 boom. It's sort of the whole thing entirely passed me by in a way that I feel like it shouldn't have, but it absolutely did.
It was a very strange age where basically. Because everything was done through D20, pretty much, or traveling Babylon 5 into D20 was a headache. But there were other properties which were even less suited for the whole class level thing, which were also hammered into it.
Yes, yeah, because that's how role playing works. It's
because D20 sort of implies you go off on adventures and implies this sort of supplement treadmill of there will be more books in the line.
Eventually writing Minbari poetry to keep extending the line, yes.
Exactly. It was all based around three verse things where basically you have one verse from the religious view, one verse from the warrior view, one verse from the worker view.
Very good.
I had it all worked out. I'm very glad the book got cancelled.
Although who knows, maybe the whole world would have gone Minbari poetry mad if you've born out a new genre.
I mean, you can't know counterfactuals. I can't say that wouldn't have happened, but
I acknowledge that it may seem unlikely from a certain perspective.
Exactly. It doesn't keep me up at night going, oh, those bastards, They took my chance to found a new art form. No, I was happy to be transferred over to writing, what was it at that point? Probably D20 Conan stuff.
Well, yep, there was plenty of it around. Which indeed. I guess the advantage being that you knew what you were in for in a way that, I guess, sort of one of the lovely things about modern role-playing is that you absolutely don't know what you're in for when you kind of open a book, and it could work anyway.
Yeah.
Including I was trying to arrange an interview with somebody who has written a D13 based game in which if you roll the wrong way you can destroy the entire world in turn one, which is just so kind of out there and different from level one. You've got to go and kill a bunch of low level things.
Yeah, I have questions including how are they going to hit D13? Physically?
from the chat with him, basically he bought up all of the D13s in Europe,
okay,
to bundle in with the game, because obviously you need to sell the D13 with the book.
Can you have a 13-sided?
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah. I think it looks like a sort of non-Euclidean abomination, but yeah, you can have a 13-sided shape.
Okay, I'll have to look this up.
he did in the end I think, end up buying up the entire supply in America as well at one point, because he was the only person selling D13s for this game. But yeah, you know, as things shift, there are more loose storytelling games, and even the Expanse has been a bit of an adjustment in that it's not, here is one discrete thing you're doing within a discrete period of time, and if it's a big number you succeed, if it's a small number you fail. There's way more nuances kind of baked in, and an idea that, oh, you're going to be doing this over a certain period of time, and abstracting, which has been an adjustment for me and my GMing, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think in a weird way, we've circled back to that era. D20, and the original D20 boom when third edition came out, was also around the time that the Forge was kicking off, and the whole indie scene was sort of happening for the first time, where you had like sort of small, new, weird games. And now there's like, again, with itch.io and so forth, you've got this like, you know, huge flood of even weirder, newer games. But at the same time, there's this massive accretion around D&D 5e, and people are like, you know, trying to use 5e to do, like, you know, games it's not at all suited for, or it's like, you know, questionably suited for. So, like, you know, everything sort of come around again.
Yes, yeah, and but maintaining that appeal of, oh well, I know how 5e works, so I'm gonna recognise this character sheet, and I'm gonna understand the concepts.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we've gone all in on, and we're in fact running on the podcast, and listener, I promise we will return to. It's a theme, I'm afraid, Gareth, with my podcast schedule. Our Everyday Heroes, which is D&D 5th edition for licensing reasons. The 5th edition engine, but reused for modern action.
Right, yeah.
Which actually, I think it works really nicely for, in that you get a bunch of people, they go and do things with explosions, and the fact that it's not necessarily that grounded in reality is sort of fine, because it's action movie storytelling. Mm-hmm. They have a number of tie-in licenses, including Pacific Rim, another of my deep loves, because if you can't get on board with giant robots punching monsters in the face, then... it's possible we just won't get on. It's fine, but that's just the way it is. So, yeah, we're very, very excited to get to the Pacific Rim campaign, but I have to finish this Expanse campaign and listener, don't worry, we will eventually get back to the superhero campaign that we ran as well. We're a smooth, well-oiled business planned machine in the D20 Future Show.
That's it, yeah.
With nesting campaigns, all of which are late because I moved house and that took over my life. Meaning that welcome to 2025, listener, as I finally got around to publishing this episode, as we discuss Dragon Meat 2023. Although in a rare treat, we are in fact discussing it in the year it took place, which does not always happen with my post-Dragon Meat interviews.
Well, see, it's quite tricky for a Dragon Meat, because how late the year takes place as well. Like, you know.
Yes, I mean, there's no way a listener is listening to this in 2023. It will be 2024. But
maybe they're enjoying the Christmas dinner right now, or like you're recovering from like you.
That
how better just
getting this out in the next few days, and I have another episode I'm supposed to be doing that for.
Absolute faith in you.
It is disorganisation all the way down, Gareth. That's
oh dear.
That is the way the podcast works. But it's all coming, listener. I promise. So having eventually got round to mentioning Dragon Meat again, what's next for you? What's next for Pelgrane Press other than the Delta Green campaign revolving around the heroin trade?
For me, also coming out soon is the Paragon Blade, which is the fantasy one-to-one game. Pelgrane, a bunch of one-player, one-GM games. We've got Clue Confidential, which is basically you're playing one lone investigator versus the Mythos. Mm-hmm. There's Nice Big Agent Solo Ops, where you're playing one Jason Bourne super spy versus vampires. Paragon Blade is you're playing one fantasy hero plus a small supporting cast versus fantasy monsters. So you're playing either like, you know, a hero with a magic sword, or a sorceress with a talking owl familiar, or a sort of fantasy version of Batman in this spooky city with this talking amulet. That should be out next year. I'm working on the second edition of Trail of Cthulhu, which is the flagship Pelgrane Gumshoe line. Mm-hmm. That should be kickstarting next year. There's a campaign which we've been promising since literally early Dragon Meets.
Oh dear.
Oh yeah. Basically, the first Pelgrane product, or one of the first Pelgrane products, was this D20 source book called Book of Unremitting Horror. This was out in like 2003 or so, and it was re-released for these terrorists in 2006. And in that, the references to the upcoming Ocean Game campaign. And now, a mere 20-ish years later, it's finally going to come out. probably next year, because it's in layout as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not Pelgrane. I did the Maria source book, which for the One Ring, which we kickstarted this year and was supposed to be out to backers before Christmas, and they're going to be setting after Christmas, but it's they're just like finishing out layout on that as well.
Yeah.
What else? I did a campaign for Heart for Roan Rook Deckard,
mm-hmm.
which was called Dagger in the Heart, and then some. Was it Critical Role or someone who was doing a Dagger role-playing? Or?
Yes, Dagger Heart is the new kind of big D12-powered game from Critical Role, yes.
Yeah, so we thought having a big company do something called Dagger Heart and do a campaign called Dagger in the Heart might have caused slight search engine optimization. It's been renamed to... I have the name somewhere. It is not Spooky Evil Trains, but it is basically Spooky Evil Trains, the campaign.
Right, okay. That sounds a very Roan Rook and Deckard type product.
Yeah, indeed. And with my non-gaming hat on, I've got a new novel coming out as well this year, which is the second book in my Lands of the Firstborn trilogy from Orbit. Book one is basically a bunch of adventurers 20 years ago killed the Dark Lord, ended up basically ruling History of Evil and basically trying to manage it. They occupied Mordor. And book two is, book one is all went wrong, and book two is the war that happens after it all goes wrong.
Right, okay. My goodness, that is a terrifying number of things on your slate. How do you keep track of it all?
Oh, A, with great difficulty, B, with spreadsheets, and the trick for next year actually has been writing lots of those several years ago, and then there's hard crunch of layout and printing due to the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
when nothing happened for several years, so... I always seem quite productive because I have issues with writing too many things. But because of the whole production crunch a few years ago, there were a couple of very sort of fallow years in terms of actually books coming out. But now there is this wave of things that I wrote several years ago finally hitting print, or hopefully finally hitting print.
Okay.
So next year, all going well, I will look like this either mad genius or like sort of constant irritation. Oh, I have a new book out.
Amazing. Well, other than the kind of borderline infinite number of things that you have coming out next year, do you have anything else you want to plug? Social media handles, blogs, websites?
Yeah, I mean, normally I would plug my Twitter, but that seems like, you know, sort of going, here, look at my sandcastle. Come and see my sandcastle.
Yes, yeah. I've been sort of expecting Twitter to disappear, I think, since the last time I was doing post-Dragon Meat interviews, but it does seem to be just getting worse.
Yeah!
How can I phrase this delicately? Adult dating websites have started to filter into my adverts now. When they've gone beyond bots and are now adverts, I feel like the end must be coming.
I have lots of cryptocurrencies. What I used to be getting slightly insulting.
A lot of that has been coming through. And, of course... troubling conspiracy theories, which are the other thing that say maybe it's time to leave.
Yeah, I was very very guilty because an awful lot of my work make you up conspiracy theories. Because I do a lot of like modern horror games, where it's like aha,
mm-hmm.
what if vampires are behind the European Union's control of garlic smuggling? And you feel like and you do a lot of like reading of these things. And you sort of spot this, like. Starts of not spotting patterns, but like so, with any conspiracy theory about monsters, then you sort of scratch mm-hmm. like for 2 minutes, and go, oh, and this guy's very anti-Semitic, and this guy is very anti-Semitic.
Yeah. It seems to troubling times.
Indeed.
But have you found where you're going to instead of Twitter? Have you made the jump to Threads or Blue Sky or?
Well, Threads only just like last week came out for the European Union. Because there were legal issues, so like everyone else had been on Threads for ages, but here in Ireland we couldn't get Threads up until literally last week.
I forget, of course, we're not in that anymore over here.
No, but which means
we
you
did
get,
make
like,
a bit
you
of a fuss about it at the time, to be fair. But I had not realised that meant that Threads wasn't going to be an option.
Yeah, well, the EU is trying to do internet stuff, so there's an awful lot of clicking on cookies and so forth, and then having arguments with X. So X may go away in the EU before it goes away for you. We have
Right, okay.
Official bureaucrats in Brussels going, Elon, you must read out some of this information. Whereas, wasn't he hanging out with Rishi Sunak there last week or a few weeks ago going?
I think he was, yes.
Yeah, indeed. So theoretically, I'm on Blue Sky and Threads and Mastodon. I seem to be using Blue Sky more than anything else, but the safest thing is just garhanrahan.com, which is like, you know, a website that I actually own and control and can curiously update at some point. And that would be like, you know, the one fixed point from which all the things.
There you go. Well, listener, do check that out, and you will, yes, presumably you will see a tidal wave of new updates as new books come out.
That's the plan. Or else I'll forget to update, and it'll be like, oh, here's the last 2 years worth of books.
Yeah, I did a lot of things. Here's your shopping list.
Indeed.
Well, Gareth, thank you so much for your time and giving us a chance to reminisce not only about Dragon Meat, but also about Babylon 5.
We didn't even touch on Legend of the Rangers and beautiful.
We didn't touch on Legend of the Rangers.
Presaging of VR combat.
I mean, Legend the Rangers should have been the perfect place to for a Babylon 5 campaign. Presumably
Absolutely.
There was a Rangers source book, but that feels like...
I don't know if you did it. We should do a former Rangers source. I think Rangers are full in the back of the Mbari book for the most part, which was in retrospect was an absolute mistake, because they are like the ideal... A bunch of player characters.
I don't want to tell you how to do your job, Gareth, in that I think you've been doing it longer than I have, and to a higher standard, but that feels like the most obvious place to put a campaign, and certainly a more obvious book to publish than the Vorlon source book.
Oh, really? People like want the Vorlon.
I mean,
maybe to see, like, you know, what the hell was this?
Yeah, that's pretty much the reason I want it now. This is true. Now I know it exists, so maybe you are right. Yeah, Rangers feel like a bunch of people who went out to do secret missions that would not necessarily have hit the plot of the main show and could have gained more capabilities as they went on.
Indeed.
That feels like the place. But, as I say, greater minds, no doubt, than I made the decision about such things.
I would not be at all sure about that.
But thank you so much for your time. Listener, do check out garahanrahan.com to find many, many books and so on. And if you outbid me on eBay for the Vorlon source book, then I may well come to your house, listener, just so you know. Brill, thank you so much, Gareth, for your time. And have a lovely Christmas. Viewers, I hope you had a lovely Christmas. Viewers, listeners, I hope you had a lovely Christmas. There are no viewers to this conversation. And I will hope to catch you next time at Dragon Meet, when, who knows, either of us might have 5 minutes to say hello.
In that 5 minutes, we should say hello.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks once again to Gareth for his time. Do check out the many and varied things that Gareth is doing, all to be found at garahanrahan.com. Next time, I hope to be back with our Jason Statham recorded at Dragon Meet 2023. It was a good one. Catch you next time on the next episode of the D20 Future Show.
I couldn't find the guys.
No, Siri randomly decided to leap in and terrify something.